This is a Discovery Channel podcast. We are a society with an army of 2 million men in prison, and 95% of these prisoners end up back on the streets. There, almost half of them commit other crimes and are sent back to prison.
About 5 years ago, I got the biggest part of this.
At Ohio Supermax in Youngstown, Ohio, inmate Anthony Liberatore doesn't get many chances to show off his body art.
18 years in prison, and I've run across quite a few really good tattoo artists, and these are the result. This here, it's just a skull with some funny colored eyes. He's missing one eye. I've got a girl with butterfly wings. Until now, my mom didn't know I had all these tattoos.
1 hour a day, he has the right to leave his cell for exercise and a shower. In fact, glass has been removed from the windows of one of the exercise cells, which allows the authorities to maintain that inmates have access to outside recreation.
The biggest part for me is just breathing fresh air.
Warden David Johnson.
We currently have over 460 inmates here. Of that number, all but 12 are doing very well. Those 12 take up an awful lot of our time and energy, and we continue to try to reach those 12 as we have the vast majority of inmates.
Legally, no seriously mentally ill inmates should be imprisoned at the Ohio Supermax. As part of a settlement of a class action lawsuit, Ohio agreed that very mentally ill prisoners must be held in other institutions. Dr. Stuart Grashin is a forensic psychiatrist on the faculty of the Harvard Medical School.
I've been studying the effects of solitary confinement on prisoners for about the last 20 years. During the course of that, I've probably interviewed well over 100 inmates and evaluated the mental health records of several hundred. An individual with a history of illiteracy, probably mild mental retardation, some evidence of central nervous system dysfunction in the past, hyperactivity, attention deficit disorder, a history of being diagnosed with major mood disorders, and in his case as well with a psychotic disorder. Well, put them in a situation of stringent confinement, and it's just common sense what's going to happen to them. They're not going to be able to tolerate those kind of conditions, and their behavior is just going to deteriorate. In some supermax facilities, there are some very limited opportunities for communication. Often those opportunities involve shouting at each other. Now, I know I've been in those cells, I've talked to inmates who've been in those cells. After a while, shouting back and forth becomes so odious, so unpleasant, that after a while you start giving up. It's kind of hard to commit suicide in a setting like that. You have to be pretty desperate to do it. And often the ways that people go about it are pretty desperate and sometimes pretty grotesque. Well, if you look at inmates who are that desperate to get out of those cells that they're willing to hurt themselves in the kind of awful way, I mean, cutting off their genitals, all kinds of awful things, people eating parts of their own bodies, seen that? The fact that this type of incarceration causes severe psychiatric disturbances and overt psychotic states has been well known for a long time. I've seen individuals who've made multiple attempts at suicide, awful attempts, and finally succeeded. And in reviewing those situations, I've seen departments of correction say the person was not mentally ill and he was only manipulating, and tragically, he went too far.
Is it really reasonable for the public to expect that corrections can solve all the problems that inmates come to us with? Are we really rehabilitating inmates, or are we rehabilitating them? Can we take someone who has suffered physical and or sexual abuse as a child, failed in public education because of learning disabilities? Can we take these people who come to us with so many scars and turn them around? I think it's really quite remarkable that we are able to keep more than one in three of them from coming back.
What life is like inside of the Youngstown Supermax prison depends on which side of the steel door you're on, officer or inmate. The antagonism begins as an officer makes the rounds. An inmate tries to intimidate her. And she doesn't give him the satisfaction of noticing.
This is a real stressful situation. Daily, I've been here approximately 15, 16 months. Days are uneventful. One day flows into the next. Pretty much uniformity. There's no real human interaction. It's really hard. If you don't have no steady outside communications, this place really begins to bear on you.
Generally, there are many stress programs that we run throughout this institution. Mental health runs a stress program. Unit staff offers stress programs.
Educational programs are offered also. There are three teachers for the 465 prisoners.
I'm the teacher here at OSP. I teach all levels, 1 through 12, and we do that through a multitude of resources, including the video. This week we're going to finish up the fractions. We're going to do the multiplication and division. So the tape was already on this morning. Did you get a chance to watch it?
Yeah, it's been on all morning. Yeah.
Okay, good. But you did real good on that quiz. If you have any problems, you know, put a big question mark on your paper. Got it?
They tell you, you do this, you do that, we can get you out of here. You do what they tell you to do, it's not recognized. Like I said, I've been in every program the prison system's got to offer. 15, 20 different programs. I got certificates and stuff in there, a big stack of them. But they're just useless paper.
When you get frustration, you try not to take it out on the staff, but sometimes it comes out. And when it does, then you get punished for it.
When conflicts arise between inmates and officers, either side can file a complaint. The complaints are heard by a panel of prison staff. Sergeant Norma Johnston.
We have a lot of disobedience of direct orders. We have some assaults. Spitting is considered an assault. Headbutting is considered an assault. Even though they're being escorted with the handcuff behind their back, they still have means of attacking.
Inmate Bolton, you were written up for disobedience of a direct order, which shall include aggravated insubordination. How do you plead on these charges?
I'm pleading not guilty.
You're pleading not guilty?
Yes.
What did Mr. Cassidy say to you when he came to your door?
I don't know what he said. Like I said, I was asleep.
He didn't say, you didn't hear him say urine, you know, need a urine sample from you or anything
no,
like that?
No, sir. Like I said, I wasn't in my right state of mind anyway. You know, when you sleep, you just waking up, being in your right state of mind. So I could have said anything to the guy.
He didn't come back?
Mm-mm. I wouldn't have no problem don't give him no urine. I wouldn't have no problem at all doing it for him. Like I said, I was asleep.
Mr. Cassidy, you wrote M.A. Bolton up for a Class 2 Rule 1 disobedience of a direct order. Was the M.A. coherent? Did he know you were there?
That morning, we were doing the random testing within that pod. Inmate Bolton refused at that time. When an inmate refuses, we don't return to the cell. It's only if he claims at that time that he is unable to go.
So in your professional opinion, he was awake and did know that you wanted a urine test from him, correct?
Yes.
Any further questions, M.A. Bolton? This is a continuation of RIB case number 50017. M.A. Bolton, this panel has voted independently for a decision to be made. It was a majority vote. We found you guilty, and the panel is recommending to the warden that to place you on level 1 status for 30 days. Due to the fact you did refuse to submit to a urine test.
Level 1 means no visits from relatives or friends, no family phone calls, and no TV.